Well, welcome to Stutter Talk. This is a very special episode. Today I speak with my good buddy, John Coakley, who is the first person who stutters I ever met. I've wanted to do this interview for years, and today we do. The episode opens and closes with songs by John's band, Dirty Wings, and in the middle of the episode, we feature some compositions by John. Links are available at stuttertalk.com at episode 519. Enjoy the show.
Went to the well too many times. Tried to drink the water, fell in the slime. He waved a flag, a caught in a war. Buried the hatchet and they settled the score. Looked him in the eye, got a stab in the back. He was a target and he caught all the flak. Started the fire that burnt the palace down. Flames kept on burning and destroyed the whole town. And the villagers come.
Everyone, welcome to Stutter Talk, changing how you think about stuttering. Episode 519 for June 12th, 2015. I'm your host, Peter Reitzes, here in Carrboro, North Carolina, starting with some good voluntary stuttering. And I'd like to welcome my good friend, John Coakley. Hey, John.
Hi, Peter.
John, I have been trying to get you on Stutter Talk. I don't know if I've asked you 50 times. I am so thankful that after all these years, I've persuaded you to come on air.
Well, I'm happy to be here.
You mean a lot to me. You're a great friend, and you are, as the listeners will find out as we talk, the first person who stutters who I ever remember meeting. But we're going to get a lot into that. John Coakley is an archivist, a drummer, and a photographer who lives in New York City's East Village with his amazing wife and two confounding yet ultimately lovable cats. I can swear to all of the above because I have cat-sitted those cats several times, and they are lovely cats. You have to earn their affection, and even when you earn it, you don't get it, but that's okay. It keeps me coming back for more disappointment and soul-crushing.
Cats for you.
That is cats. John's band is called Dirty Wings. I've seen him and his buddies play many times, and John's photography can be found on the Etsy shop Postcards from NYC. And just some brief background, John and I met at Sarah Lawrence College, where we both went to college, and we ended up living about three blocks away from each other for a few years in Park Slope, Brooklyn. It's amazing. So, all right, John, let's get into it. We got a lot to talk about today. We're going to end the show by talking about a study on stuttering and rhythm. And you are, of course, a drummer. In fact, I met you because you and I played together in a band for maybe, I don't know, 3, 4, 5 months when we were in college. And so let me tell you how I remember it. And I want to see how you remember it, man. We had a mutual friend, Sarah. And Sarah played cello in our band because, you know, we wanted those strings, and she was amazing. And we were looking for a drummer, and we kept trying out drummers, and it wasn't working out. And we had a handful of songs. And so you are invited by Sarah to come and play with us. And we're playing at Marshall Fields, I think the place, the room was called, the house was called at Sarah Lawrence. And so we're playing in this beautiful house. We're making a lot of noise, and you come in. You set up your drums, you play with us for maybe an hour, and everybody is like, oh, this is the guy. And so I remember us all sort of circling around your drums at the end, and you started talking. And not only were you stuttering, which I don't remember ever hearing in person before, but you were stuttering quite a bit. And I remember it almost like Tourette's-y type of tics where your head was really jolting around.
Sure.
And so I remember like everyone being kind of taken aback by your stuttering. And, you know, immediately I'm like, oh my God, I'm having such a hard time with my stuttering. Nobody knows I stutter. And John's here stuttering so openly. And then when you left, to my relief and happiness, everybody was like so cool about you and your stuttering. But there was a lot of questions like, what was that? Why was John talking like that? And I remember saying something like, well, that's stuttering. And Sarah's like, yeah, guys, it's not a big deal. And it was kind of like just curiosity.
Yeah, totally.
So I'll just say one last thing. So I remember it's kind of like you came, you didn't talk at all, which I didn't really think was a big deal. And it, you kind of like let your drums do your talking. And then after an hour, we heard you talk. And that's when we really heard the stuttering. And I just want to get your reflections on that day.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I think one thing that might be different is that I remember it as us being in the band for about a month, if that.
Really? That's great.
And I think of that as something that's kind of relevant because you guys had a show coming up at the coffee house. And my recollection is that I came in and I had 3 or 4 weeks to come up with parts for 10 songs. And this was the first band that I had tried out for in a long time. And I had tried to be in a couple of other bands and at Sarah Lawrence, they never really took off. It's just people just messing around and not really doing anything. And you guys seemed pretty serious about it. So I do recall that around that time, I was having a really hard time with my stuttering. I go through periods where it just comes up in small ways. And sometimes I have really hard blocks and that do involve the head motions and lockjaw and very obvious physical things. And at that time I just broken up with my girlfriend. It was the end of the semester. I had lots of papers due. And then I was taking on this new challenge, which I really wanted to do, but I wasn't sure if I was going to be able to do it. And with people that I didn't really know too well. So, I'm not surprised that I was stuttering, quite a bit that day. But you know, it was just kind of like, I stutter and you're going to accept it or you're not, but here it is.
Right. Well, it just amazed me because I was so covert. I like the term passing as fluent. And
sure.
So I mean, weeks later or maybe days later, I don't even know, like meeting you gave me the courage to start to come out of my stuttering closet. I mean, this was like the same exact time where my stuttering was my worst for me in the sense for the first time in maybe 10 years, a decade.
Really?
My stuttering was coming out in class and I was no longer able to word switch anymore, to change the words. So I remember driving one day with one of the guys in our band, like when you were in it. So it must've been during that month. And I remember saying to him, well, I stutter too. And it was such a big deal. Like, I don't even think I told my girlfriend at the time. And he got mad at me. And he's like, no, John stutters. You don't stutter. You're just looking for attention.
Oh my God.
So yeah, I don't know if I've ever told you. So like talking to you, I always felt like, it was so weird because I was so thankful to meet another stutterer, but you were so out there with stuttering. So I always wondered, like, did John think I was making it up? Or like, what were your thoughts when I first mentioned to you that I stuttered too?
It, you know, this could just be an example of memory being different. But I don't recall hearing you stutter until a couple years later, when I came to visit you in New York around 1999, when you lived on the Upper East Side, like on Broadway 106th Street.
Yeah.
And I heard you stutter and I was surprised. And then you told me that you always had stuttered and that you had just been very effective at avoiding it. And that you were going to be going back to grad school to study speech pathology.
So I actually think our memories might be more aligned. So I don't think you would have heard me stutter at Sarah Lawrence because I was still learning. Yeah. Like at the end of Sarah Lawrence was when I first started speech therapy with Phil Schneider, who many of the listeners will know. And that's when I first started to allow myself to stutter. So you might have already been out of the band, or the band's, you know, just stopped.
Right.
It's not like we kicked you out or anything.
It just kind of fizzled. As I recall, it was at the end of the first semester, and then Sarah spent her second semester abroad. And then after she left, everyone just kind of wandered off.
Yeah. Wow. So, you've got to, and by the way, you're very generous to say we had 10 songs.
it felt like 10 songs.
Yeah. So maybe we had played together for 3-4 months and then you came in towards the end.
So
you were the missing link. Well, so you don't remember really me talking to you about stuttering until after college.
Not really. No.
See, that might be true. I thought we had talked about it in college, but you might be right.
You know, I think you might have asked me about my stuttering, and I answered a couple questions about it. So I think that certainly happened in college, but I don't think you came out, as you say, to me until we met up maybe 3 years later.
So there's something I want to share with you, and I don't know if I've ever told you this story. So if you don't want to respond, you know, I can cut this out. But so this was one of those really like, I want to say it's a painful memory, but as I get older, I understand it better. It doesn't mean it's right. I just understand. I think I do. So we were on a double date. So my girlfriend, Sydney, and I, we set you up with somebody because we really thought the world of you. We obviously still do. And you're married now. I'm married now. This is our past lives. And so we set you up with someone who was, you know, really smart, pretty, fun girl. And, you know, we thought we had a nice double date. And so I was driving and we dropped you off at your dorm and you were like 2 seconds or 2 feet out of the car. And she just starts referring to you as Stuttering John. And like she seemed somewhat insulted that we had set her up with someone who stutters. And I was pretty quiet. I don't even know if I said anything because I was very much hiding my stuttering. In fact, a few months later, I told my girlfriend that I stuttered and she didn't believe me. She thought I was just trying to get out of making phone calls to find an apartment. She thought I was just making it up. And I just remember thinking to myself, this is why I hide my stuttering. Because when you get out of the car, someone says, there goes Stuttering John. There goes Stuttering Pete. And I never wanted to be Stuttering Pete. So I don't know if I've ever told you that story or just any general. And by the way, I think this girl had a lot of her own stuff going on. So I forgive her a bit. I don't think she's a bad person. I just think she had her own junk going on. So what do you make of all that?
Well, I think you had mentioned that to me before, maybe not in such detail, but you did mention that the reason why she didn't want to see me again was because of the stuttering. And, you know, that didn't feel good. At the same time, we were in college, and, you know, as we get older, we realize that everybody has their own issues, and that when we're in high school and college years, everybody has way more issues than they probably do now. I don't know. I mean, that could just be me putting my take on it.
Sure.
But yeah, you know, that wasn't fun. On the other hand, you know, both of us found amazing women later on, you know, both, you know, I mean, after that period and when we met our wives and in between.
Right.
You know, and I think by then I was gradually, maybe unconsciously, using my openness of stuttering as kind of a filter for people.
Right, right.
Basically, you know, just to see, well, is this person worth considering and spending time with, or are they not? You know, which is kind of a maybe sort of a harsh take on people's reaction to something that they don't understand. You know, there's a good chance that she hadn't really experienced people who stutter much in her life at all. Or maybe if she had in school, that was the one person that everybody else made fun of, you know, and that was her view of what that meant to be someone who stutters. And since, as you said, she probably had her own issues, her own insecurities, she probably took that as, you know, what does that make me? If they think someone who everybody else makes fun of is the right fit for me, you know?
I do know, and I purposely did not bring up something that I'm going to bring up now. I was seeing if you were going to go to it or not, but
sure. She
had fairly, she had acne and it was very noticeable, and I know she was insecure about it.
Okay.
And so I always wondered if she kind of felt like, well, gee, they're setting the acne girl up with a stutterer. Like, is that what they think my worth is or something? And that was just my assumption. It still is my assumption, but who knows? I mean,
yeah, yeah.
But I wish you could see my notes now, because I scribbled a few minutes ago social filter, because we used to have a host, Greg, on Stutter Talk, and he used to talk about the social filter of stuttering and how it could really help you figure out who you want to spend time with and who you don't want to spend time with.
It's true.
Yeah,
it's totally true.
So when I read your bio, I saw that you did not list poet. And I think when we first met, you might have included poet. And so I
certainly would have, yeah.
Yeah, and I went to see you read poetry at least once. So I want to remind you of something. I don't even know if you remember it. But shortly after we first met, you were at a poetry reading on campus, and it was really a packed house. There were a lot of people there. Mm-hmm. And you said something to the audience like, I stutter. If you hear me get stuck, if you hear some silent blocking, just consider that a dramatic pause. And everybody laughed. And I actually told this story to the author, David Mitchell, on air. And David Mitchell laughed. And he was like, oh, John had him in the palm of his hands. I'm like, that's exactly right. David Mitchell stutters too. So do you remember this? Is that something that you just... like, did you practice that? Is that a technique you use to be comfortable with stuttering, or did that just pop out?
I think I came up with that when I read at a reading for the first time freshman year of college. And that was also at a packed house, you know, not for me. It was a multi-person event, you know, sort of. You know, just an open call kind of thing. If you have some kind of a talent, come here. And 20 people did, and they shared their talent. But it was packed, and I was really nervous. And I don't remember if I came up with it beforehand or on the spot, but I said exactly what you said I said, and it worked. And I used it ever since for every other poetry reading since then, and for one or two other, you know, public speaking occasions for work or what have you. And I found it to be very helpful for me, probably because it was helpful for the audience. Because when I was a kid, I was very attuned to other people's reaction to my stuttering. And I could tell when people were uncomfortable or awkward and they didn't know what to do or how to react. And because nobody had told them, you know, nobody had taught them, nobody had explained it to it. It was just... the best that could happen is a teacher would notice someone making fun of my stuttering and saying, that's not nice, don't do that, that's bad, and they stopped, you know. But, you know, I kind of wish that at some point a teacher or someone had the presence of mind to say, well, John, you know, if you want to, would you want to answer any questions that the people might have about it, you know? And maybe not spontaneously, you know, maybe a teacher could have pulled me aside after class or something and asked if it was okay if she did that. But, you know, I think that would have been pretty helpful.
And that's one of the things that I try to convey on Stutter Talk, is so many people, including myself, will think of speech therapy as just about reducing stuttering. And to me, I think of it as what you're talking about. It is helping the child talk to his or her friends about stuttering, to be comfortable in class, to help other people be comfortable around the child who stutters. So, I mean, it's kind of cool how you discovered this way to help you and others with stuttering that's been discovered by other people. It's like I know you've been to speech therapy when you were younger, but that wasn't a skill you learned in speech therapy, right? That was John developed, right?
Well, it was kind of something I started to figure out after speech therapy. And a lot of that had to do with the fact that I was fortunate enough to go to a very, very small school. If I had gone to a regular sized public school, I would have been in one of the various subcategories of geek or outcast, I'm sure of it. But, you know, there were 25 kids in the entire sixth grade. Okay. And it's a small school, everybody's parents talk to each other. And so everybody knew that I had been to this intensive 5-week speech therapy camp over the summer. And during one class, you know, the teacher was out getting something. It was just us. And they asked me questions about it. And it was great because they were curious. You know, it was a genuine curiosity. I could tell that nobody was making fun of me. And everybody just wanted to know how it worked and how different, and just, you know, what I was trying to do when I was elongating sounds and things like that.
I'm sorry, please.
Thank you. And, what was really satisfying for me was the fact that, you know, the self-appointed most popular kid in the class who's kind of a jerk and kind of a bully at the end of the conversation said something like, well, I don't have to worry about anything like that. I have a clean mouth. And I said, that's not how it works. And everybody else was kind of like, yeah, where'd that come from? So that was a nice little bit of a social schadenfreude.
That is, I'm sitting down, but if I was standing, it would stop me in my tracks to hear somebody say, I have a clean, like, it sounds like, were they being mean or did they literally just assume that stuttering was dirty?
Knowing this particular kid, he was being mean. Yeah. And to be fair, it could also be that he was being mean, but also repeating something that maybe he had heard from somebody else in his family or somebody else that he knew, you know? I mean, I remember once asking a man for directions and I started to stutter and he all of a sudden backed up and said, whoa, 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 I don't want anything to do with this. And I was like, what? And he said, well, you stutter and that means that you're a liar. That's what my family taught me. And then he just walked away.
Wow.
And that was a really strange and it's worth pointing out, very unusual, not representative reaction. You know?
Yeah. I agree with you. I do wonder though how much of that stuff and similar stuff goes on. I always think of the child I worked with in Brooklyn who we had an IEP meeting and the two parents were there and resource room teacher, special ed teacher. I mean, it was just a packed house, principal, assistant principal, and we're sitting there. Uh-huh. And, you know, I get my 30 seconds because it's like, you know, a 2 or 3 hour meeting. It's all through an interpreter. And so through the interpreter, I was told that, oh, well, we know our child stutters because he's sinned against God. God is punishing him.
Wow.
And it's so heavy. And then the meeting just moves on. And so here's this like 6-year-old boy, 7-year-old boy going home from school every day,
right,
being raised that he gets stuck when he talks because he's a sinner.
Because God disapproves.
Oh, yeah. And I wonder how much of this stuff goes on. Like and then the flip of it is all the kids I knew, which far outweighed this. Like, I probably knew 8 or 10 kids in Brooklyn who would tell me, well, I stutter because God gave me this as a hurdle to make me stronger. So their religion was, and there was a lot, I heard a lot about religion in Brooklyn. I really never expected that moving to New York City, but there was this belief, generally speaking, that stuttering was given to you by God to challenge you. But in this, with this one family, this child was a sinner. And I can't imagine what that does to a child.
It can't be good. It cannot be good. I mean, it's the kind of thing that, you know, in our circles, it seems so arcane. It's just so old fashioned that you almost expect it to be a joke. You know, to put a pop cultural comparison to it, it makes you think of the mother in the movie in the book Carrie, you know, sending Carrie off to the closet because she's born of sin. It's just, you know, it's just really, it's really unfortunate.
Yeah. I mean, I had an experience yesterday where I took my son to the pool and he's 5. And we got out of the pool and we were going into the clubhouse to use the bathroom. And he asked somebody a question who was working on the pool with a net, pulling out leaves and stuff. And he asked the guy a question. And my son's intonation is a little off at times. So it sounded a bit atypical the way my son asked it.
Okay.
And there were two children in the pool with their mother. And these two children, they were Asian. I don't know if they were Chinese or Korean, but they made fun of my son in thick accents, as we walked away. And I don't even think it was making fun of. I think they just thought, oh, he sounds weird. Let's put it in our mouths. It's such a weird thing. So, I mean, I can imagine there would be some kids who would tease these children for having very thick accents.
Yeah.
I don't know if they were teasing my son or not, but it's kind of amazing that in front of a parent, they would feel comfortable doing that. And, you know, I'm already inside the clubhouse as I'm hearing this. And, you know, what am I going to go back and, like, you know, have a sit down with this family? I mean, you know, it's just weird. But there's some weirdness. So I honestly don't know if they were teasing my son or just kind of like, oh, that's weird. Let's put that in our mouths. Like, they did think it was funny. I don't know if they were trying to be mean or not.
It's hard to tell, you know, kids are so inscrutable sometimes, and it's hard to know if motivation is amusement, curiosity, power. I mean, you know, maybe they had been mocked for their accents, you know, and it made them feel powerless. It made them feel weak. And they saw an opportunity to make themselves feel powerful by putting somebody else down because they sounded different.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or, you know, or as you said, it could have just been curiosity. Like that's weird. Let's try that. What's that like? You know, it's hard to say.
So I think that first time I met you and perhaps a few times afterwards, you might have been stuttering on 80% or more of the words you said. Now, you might not remember it the same way, but I remember you stuttered on the majority of what you said. And we can tell now that in the last, you know, I've known you for years. Since then, we used to get beers and burgers all the time in Brooklyn. And I hope you don't mind me saying it seems like your stuttering has been consistently reduced since college. I mean, I'm sure you have your peaks and valleys.
Yeah.
But help the listeners understand that. Like, how is it you can go from these big head movements and a majority of speech being stuttered to talking the way you're talking now?
It's a good question. I don't completely understand it myself. As you said, I do have peaks and valleys, and a lot of that has to do with stress. And I was very, very stressed at the end of that semester. So there was that. And I was also I think I also had some kind of cold or flu or something going on, and which would sometimes happen at the end of a semester when everything was due. I'd get stressed and stay up too late, and then my health would go down, and I'd catch a bug for a week. And so there's that. But yeah, there are peaks and valleys for sure. And there have been stretches since then that have been fairly severe, but I think that was the most severe it's been in like 20 years. I think a lot of it has to do with your level of comfort in stuttering, which is one thing which you bring up quite a bit, which I really appreciate, is just the fact that, you know, being fluent isn't bad, but it's not the be all end all. And you know, everybody, there are so many different factors that go into stuttering, neurological and emotional, and what you were taught as a kid, and the examples that you saw, and how you feel about yourself and your self-confidence. So in stuttering, as in most things, I'm very, very leery of saying, well, what I know to be true, and this is true for everybody, is, you know, like I like one solution fits all. That never made sense to me. But
I agree.
But yeah, but speaking for myself, so much of it just has to do with being comfortable with it and accepting that it's going to happen. And sometimes when it happens, it's annoying. But, you know, the people in my life know that I stutter and it's not a big deal. And they just kind of, they're just patient with me, and I get through it and I move on. And that has been pretty much what has worked for me. I did go through intensive speech therapy programs once when I was 11 and once when I was, 21. 20. Oh, once when I was 11, once when I was 20. And I learned some good things there, but I found that consistently applying the techniques I was taught was like learning how to walk everywhere backwards. And it really was very, very difficult for me. And I had, you know, I eventually came to think that, you know, some of the more extreme techniques involved elongating everything you say, like that. And the goal was so that you could be more aware of your articulators and what's happening. You could feel what you say as much as you hear what you say, which makes a lot of sense. But, you know, I would use the more subtle versions of that, but there were times when I could have used that extremely slow version of speech therapy technique. And I just chose not to, because I felt like everybody I'm speaking with already knows that I stutter, and it makes things a little bit awkward for everybody, but they know about it. I don't want to do this too, because this doesn't feel like an improvement to me. And again, this is very personal. This is not a blanket approval or disapproval of technique at all. But me at that time as a kid, when I was already insecure for lots of other reasons. I was pretty overweight at the time too. And my parents were pretty much liberal hippies, and most of the parents at my school were pretty conservative. Lots of things. You know, it just didn't make sense to me to use a technique that would make me seem strange or feel strange in a brand new way.
Yeah, I forget who said it, when the cure is worse than the disease. Yeah.
I mean, you know, and again, it's a very personal thing, and I really don't think any one system or one school of thought is going to work for everybody at all. But for me, me being able to accept the fact that I stutter, my family being able to accept the fact that I stutter, and my friends being able to accept the fact that I stutter, that gradually built up my self-confidence to the point where, you know, unless I was unusually stressed, I didn't stutter a lot. I would still stutter sometimes. You know, I've stuttered a few times here, but I'm comfortable talking with you. I know you, and this is obviously a very safe space to stutter.
Right, right.
You know,
perhaps clearly, the safest.
Probably the safest there is.
Yeah.
And ironically, that means that I'm going to stutter less, because there is kind of a chicken and egg thing going on there for me, and I assume for quite a few people, where the anticipation of stuttering and the fear of stuttering is the best predictor of it happening. Hmm. You know?
Oh, yeah.
Where it's the old thing in school where everybody reads one paragraph from the book, and you're sitting in a circle, and you're at one end of the circle, and one person reads one paragraph, and the next person reads the next paragraph, and it gets closer and closer and closer and closer to you. And the anticipation builds and the tension builds, and then you finally get there. And if you let that fear and anticipation build up, then yeah, you're going to stutter a lot, you know? But for me, I just gradually learned to not care too much about what other people thought, because I saw that they still accepted me even if I did it, and even if I didn't use the techniques that I had gone to great pains to learn and you know, should have put more work in, or maybe I shouldn't have.
Wow. It's taken us 20 years to have this conversation.
Yeah.
And I personally liked how you demonstrated the elongated speech, because I get called to task when I do that by some listeners.
Okay.
And I that's exactly my problem with some of the treatments, is that I don't like how it feels or how it sounds, and I wouldn't want to do that either. And so I appreciate you. It's like you're giving me a little cover, because when I say that, I get in trouble sometimes. It's really interesting about what you said about walking backwards, because I completely agree. And I just want to point out to you and listeners that I'm sort of recently trying to remind folks that speech therapy is about much more than speech tools, because when you were talking about how, well, this is who I am, you either deal with it or you don't, you know, that's something I learned in speech therapy. And to me, that was teaching me how to walk forwards. Because for me, walking backwards is all the avoidance and trying not to stutter and passing as fluent and living a lie. Like, that was like walking backwards in circles on my hands. I mean, that was crazy. But being told you're allowed to stutter and it's okay to stutter, and it's okay to stutter differently, that was teaching me to walk forward. So, you know, that I know you're not disagreeing with that. I just wanted to put that out on the table. And let me ask you, is it all right with you if I have some of your compositions? Can I include a little bit of that music in this podcast?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. This is Stutter Talk. Peter Reitz is here with John Coakley, and we just heard a little bit of John's amazing work done by himself, I assume, in your New York City apartment, right, John?
Yes. I am playing with two different bands right now, actually, one of which isn't named yet, otherwise I'd promote them too. But I also have a little electronic drum console here, which I can play with. And fortunately, a reality of New York City life is you cannot play your full drum kit where you live. It's just not possible. you will get kicked out very quickly. So that's in a separate practice space in an industrial building where we all practice.
You know, man, I was taking a run or walk like 6 months ago, and I heard a guitar coming out of a window here in North Carolina. And it occurred to me, I hadn't heard an live instrument coming out of a person's house in years.
Wow.
Years. And I don't think I've heard it since. So I'm wondering, like, where are all the garage bands? Where are all the drummers? And because I live in the suburbs, man. I mean, if there's going to be drummers, it's going to be right here, right?
I mean, I lived in the suburbs as a kid, and that's where I learned how to play in our basement, you know, and which I guess was pretty well soundproofed, you know. It was underground, and we didn't really have windows in the basement. And, you know, I once had somebody else play my drums as loud as a kid as an experiment, and walked outside and couldn't hear anything. So it was great. You know, I could play 3 hours a day after school if I wanted to and not bother anybody. It's wonderful.
Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah.
So here's a question I'm dying to ask you. In fact, I was going to ask you first, but we got so into stuff. So, so I love talking to you for many reasons. And one of them is this: all the people we get on Stutter Talk, almost all of them, are really interested in stuttering, and they're part of the stuttering world. They belong to self-help groups. They participate in self-help. They go to professional conferences, but you don't do any of that. And I'm guessing you're not part of the stuttering online community on Facebook. And
not really, no.
Yeah. And like every day I get a Google alert with the word stuttering. So every day I get a list of news reports that have the word stuttering in it, because I really want to be up on stuttering. So you're one of the people who perhaps is living with stuttering, but not so like, do you not feel that you need to be around other stutterers? Is it something you've already done through your group therapy, and you did it, and you like, can you talk about this?
Yeah. Not really sure where to begin, but maybe one place to begin would be with the monthly meetings that I attended after I went through speech therapy the first time when I was 11. And, you know, it was something that would happen once a month, and people who lived in the area would get together and we'd talk about technique and staying on things. And one of the speech pathologists from the clinic would be there running the meeting. And in some ways it was helpful, and in other ways I kind of felt like I was spinning my wheels, because especially as I got a little bit older, I really became less interested in applying those techniques. And the tone of those meetings, and this is my childhood interpretation, so very subjective. I'm sure a lot of people had a very different experience. But thinking back on it now, my experience was, this is kind of like an AA meeting. Hmm. This is kind of like, you know, this is like, we're all here admitting that we stutter, and we're working on it, and we're trying to not let it rule our lives, you know? And it really kind of felt like, you know, there's this thing called stuttering, and it's like being an alcoholic, you know? And it's not really ruining other people's lives, but it's ruining your life. And therefore, if you're not using these techniques to make it better, you're just letting your life go. And that's a shame.
So the group you participated in was connected to using speech tools that you all had learned.
Right.
Okay.
Right. Exactly. You know, so there was a little bit of shaming involved, sometimes implicit, sometimes explicit. And that kind of turned me off. And so much of it just has to do with your individual personality, I think, whether or not you seek out people who are going through similar things. And maybe because of that initial experience or other experiences I've had from friends or family who got really wrapped up in different pop psychology movements that turned out to be snake oil, you know, and what I saw from that, I've just become a little suspicious of not suspicious, but just doubtful that there is much for me there. I feel like as I'm explaining this, that I'm putting things that are important to people down. And I really don't want to do that. It's really not my intention at all.
No, see, I think you're sharing your experience. So I appreciate what you just said, but I think you're just talking about John.
Okay. Well, fair enough. You know, and so So yeah, I think there were probably people at those exact same meetings who were getting a lot out of it and were really grateful to be surrounded by people who stuttered like them and had people that they could talk to about it. And I was too for a while, but then after a while, I just didn't feel the need for that as much. And I remember talking about it with kids at the speech therapy program when I was there that summer when I was 11 years old. And they were talking about different names that they were called as kids. And I realized that I hadn't been called those same names. Like, nobody called me Machine Gun or anything like that, or whatever dumb names kids come up with, because I was really lucky enough to go to this small school. Everybody knew everybody. And it was just too small to say, these are the geeks and we all make fun of them, you know? That's just been my personal experience.
But I had a few years ago a conversation with somebody from, I forget it was Australia or New Zealand, and I said to them, well, are you going to any meetings in your area? They were reaching out for support. And I said, oh man, our meetings are all about fluency. And if you're not fluent, you're doing something wrong. So, your word shaming, I think, is perfect. So if your experience of being involved with other stutterers involved shaming, then I can imagine that's why you wouldn't want to go back.
Yeah. And I don't want to give the impression that this is a World War II era British prep school where they're slapping your hands with canes or anything like that. You know, this is not Pink Floyd, The Wall. It's just like, okay, you can do better than that. Come on. I know you can do better than that. You're better than that. Come on. You know, it's just kind of that sort of pop psychology thing that, you know, that I had certain issues with. And I say this as someone who married an actual therapist and who is actually in therapy now. I'm actually very, very pro therapy. I think most people should get therapy at some point in their lives, which I'm just kind of suspect of change your life in 10 easy steps, you know? And some of these places and the meetings sometimes smacked of that.
Well, and I think it's really good to be skeptical of anything regarding treatment and self-help and therapy, because, I mean, just going online, it's kind of like, oh my God, there's this world out there where, you know, but then we have to be careful, because like sometimes what seems like snake oil can sincerely help some people.
Yeah. That's certainly true. Yeah. It's very complicated. It's very subjective.
Yeah. So let's talk about stuttering and disability, and then we're going to get into stuttering and rhythm and drumming.
Sure.
So I know that you listened to the recent Stutter Talk episode with Christopher Constantino on stuttering and disability. And so this topic keeps coming up about how some folks believe that stuttering might not be a disability or an impairment, but that society disables us by how they view and treat stuttering. And then the question comes up, well, is stuttering impairing? You know, and I made the point on air recently where I can get really tired from talking and stuttering and not want to talk anymore on some days, but just because it's so hard for me to speak. So stuttering openly can be tiring. And then using speech tools can also be as tiring or more tiring. So it's like, you know, so yeah, it's okay to stutter, but stuttering can be really tiring. I know people who stutter who say that it causes them chest pain when they stutter so much.
Okay.
And then there's just the frustration of wanting to say more and not being able to. And so I'm curious where you come down on this. Do you feel that your stuttering is impairing or disabling, or what are your thoughts?
I think it can be. You know, I think my stuttering can be impairing and it can be disabling, depending on the severity and how I feel at that time. I think it really does bring up the whole question of, if you have a certain disability, do you label yourself with that disability. And do you take that disability on as your identity? And, you know, I think a long ways back, I remember, I think hearing you mention, you know, the phrase people who stutter as opposed to stutterers. And that seemed to be a really important distinction to me, to say that, you know, I'm someone who stutters, and I'm also, you know, someone who drums, someone who reads Jack Reacher novels and then reads some poetry, and someone who does this and someone who does that, you know? And I mean, I will admit that on one or two job applications where they've asked if you have any kind of a disability, and I feel like it might be the kind of organization that's looking to fill a quota, I checked yes.
And I've heard that before, where there sometimes we think stuttering could work in our favor.
It once got me out of a speeding ticket.
Wow. Did the police officer feel sorry for you, or did he or she have a friend who stutters, or do you know why it got you out?
I think he felt sorry for me, and or he just didn't have the time, because I got pulled over and I was really nervous because I'd never been pulled over before. It was my first experience with the police, and I had just been speeding in a small town. I realized it was because I was really getting into the Smashing Pumpkins song and I was just rocking out to it. Then I realized, oh, I'm doing 40 in a 30 mile per hour. And then I saw the flashing lights, and he asked me why I was speeding, and I just got stuck in a really hard block. And he was like, okay, fine. Just don't do it again. Remember, you're in a small town here. People are walking around. Just go 30 miles an hour. I got let off.
Wow. So listeners, you heard it here first. If you want to get out of a speeding ticket, turn on the stuttering.
It's a good argument for intentional stuttering right there.
Wow. Awesome. So let's talk about stuttering and drumming and rhythm. So there was a recent small study in the Journal of Brain and Language titled Evidence for a Rhythm Perception Deficit in Children Who Stutter. They looked at 17 children who stutter, 17 children who do not stutter. And the study reported that, quote, children who stutter showed worse rhythm discrimination than typically developing children. These findings provide the first evidence of impaired rhythm perception in children who stutter, supporting the conclusion that developmental stuttering may be associated with a deficit in rhythm processing, end quote. So I'm going to ask your thoughts on this study in just a second, but I think the way they did it, and this is a brief summary, is they basically played the children two drum tracks that were identical, and then they played a third drum track, and the children had to say if it was identical to the first two or different. And what they found was children who do not stutter were better able to say that third drum track was the same or different. So that's a very brief summary of it. So what do you think of that conclusion?
I think it's interesting. I think it's certainly interesting. I read the report and I saw a fair amount of mentions of the part of the brain called the basal ganglia. And when I went into speech therapy for the second time when I was 20, there were some visiting researchers who were actually studying the connection between stuttering and that part of the brain. And what they did was they put headphones on people and blasted white noise into their ears so they could not hear what they said at all. Okay, so they had people who stuttered reading things and talking, but they could not hear what they were saying. And what was interesting was that the vast majority of people who stuttered came out of that were amazed, because all of a sudden they were perfectly fluent and they didn't stutter at all. And it was incredible. And I had the opposite effect. my stuttering all of a sudden became much more severe. And I wonder if there's any connection, you know, if there's any connection between the reaction I had, the atypical reaction I had, and the fact that if you are playing music, whether you're playing drums or anything else, you're listening to the other people and you're making sure that you're lining up with them. I mean, in my experience, actually, and I definitely include myself in this, the people in the band who had the best sense of time and the best sense of tempo aren't the drummers, they're the bass players. And so just to, you know, just to make the larger point that it might not even just be drummers who stutter, it could be folks who stutter who also play music. So it's an interesting study, but it was, you know, it's one study. It's a pretty small group of students. It's a good start, but I can't imagine that you could really say we have a definitive conclusion based on 17 kids who stutter and 17 kids who don't.
Yeah, I agree with that completely. I was talking to some Stutter Talk advisors about this, and the point was brought up. There's the chicken and the egg thing too, right?
Sure.
So did rhythm perception problems become an issue once you started stuttering, or were they there before the stuttering? Or, you know, like, it's hard to tell what came first.
It is.
And
it
again, is. You pointed out it's a small study. So let me ask you this. I want to talk to you about your drumming and your stuttering, and you can feel free to go back to that study as well.
Sure.
But did you seek out drums because you are good at rhythm, because rhythm was a challenge for you, or was it for unrelated reasons?
It was unrelated. You know, I was just really, really a passionate fan of music. Like around the age of 13 and 14, I was getting into what was then known as classic rock. Now classic rock includes everything that I got into afterwards. You know, to hear Nirvana mentioned as part of classic rock just feels weird to me.
Yes, because, it does.
Yeah. Right? Because when we were kids, classic rock meant Led Zeppelin and Foghat and Bad Company and stuff like that. And that was my gateway to stuff like the Grateful Dead and David Bowie and Jimi Hendrix. And I was really getting into that. And then around the time I started playing drums, Living Color came out, and they were this mix of alternative and classic rock, and I wanted to do that. So I wanted to decide whether to play guitar or play drums. I was going to take lessons in one of them. And I already had an acoustic guitar that my grandfather had given me when I was 8 or 9 years old, and I never learned how to play. I still have it. Sam actually played it on our most recent record, which is going to be coming out in a month or two.
And I tried to tune it once, and I didn't want to break the neck. I stopped.
Thank you for doing it. Yeah. Thank you very much for stopping.
Yeah.
But I realized that I already knew lots of other people who play guitar, not too many people who play drums. So I figured I'd be more in demand. So I started taking drum lessons. I got a really beat up old kit and loved it. Mm. And there's something very unique about getting the coordination of four limbs. Like having your right arm play steady eighth notes, and then your snare hitting on the two and the forehand, and your right foot, you know, hitting on the one and the three, and your left foot doing steady quarter notes, you know, getting all that stuff together and making it work just feels physically good.
And you were so graceful doing it. I mean, I would sit down at your drums and be lost. And you'd sit down and were just like a man in control of his empire.
Master of all Azerbaijan.
Yeah, I mean, like I always imagined, and maybe I'm just completely wrong, that, and what I got to remember, when I met you, your stuttering was very intense. And I always imagined that your drums were your time to speak gracefully. And not that stuttering's not graceful, but you know what I'm saying.
I do know what you mean. You know, like one person I knew at Sarah Lawrence who stuttered was a guy named James, and he had a pretty severe stutter, but he was also a really good rapper, and he had a really, and it wasn't like, you know, there are different kinds of flows in rap. It wasn't a laid back Snoop Dogg kind of a thing. It was a very fast percussive, like that, and really intense, like leaning in on the plosives, fast syncopated kind of thing, and he would not stutter once during those performances. So that was really, really, really remarkable for me to see, you know.
Was that because a person who stutters could use their voice in such an easy manner and such a proficient manner, or for some other reason?
Primarily for that. And it was just kind of a reminder of small experiences I'd had in high school where I was acting, just for dumb skits. Like we did my Latin class had a fun parody of People's Court, and I was an interior designer named Marcus Pretentious, right? Yeah. And had to speak in this haughty, "Well, I never" kind of manner. And I was really getting into the role, and I didn't stutter once because I wasn't me. I was Marcus Pretentious, yeah. Or in Spanish class and in foreign languages, I would stutter more than when I was talking in English. It was just in terms of say this out loud. In Spanish class, I once had to play, Spanish language Igor from the Frankenstein stories. And I was speaking in a stereotypical Peter Lorre kind of voice, and I didn't stutter once. So if you have a different persona when you're rapping on stage, it makes sense that you aren't going to stutter there if you lose yourself in that.
Yeah, I completely agree with you again, and it's also partially related to how when a person sings, they generally don't stutter.
That's true. Yeah. That's true.
So, and speaking of Pretentious, I don't know how much of this is going to come through on the recording, but there have been the gorgeous sound of children playing in your background. And it's kind of like we're recording a Belle and Sebastian record here too with kids playing. So I've kept you longer than I had promised. Do you have time for just a few more questions?
Sure. I have time.
Awesome. This is Stutter Talk. Peter writes us in North Carolina. John Coakley, a good buddy of mine in New York City. I'll say it again. I'm so glad I finally got you on the podcast.
I'm glad to be here.
And we were just brought back in by a composition by John. I love your work, John.
Thank you.
So let me bring up a few more things, and I'll just say to a side, it's almost like we're drinking a beer now, but right. There is just a great interview with Mike Watt on the Mark Maron WTF podcast.
Oh, okay.
And he was talking about how he grew up on Blue Oyster Cult and, the hard rock stuff that is kind of like, really? But somehow he got from Blue Oyster Cult to being in one of the seminal punk bands,
Right.
He was in the Minutemen and Firehose and a lot of other stuff. So it's such a great interview, but that's an aside.
Okay.
So we were just talking about music and rapping, and I know that you got the chance to watch the Ed Sheeran, I don't know if I'm saying his name right, news report. So Ed Sheeran's a musician, and he just was given an award by the American Institute for Stuttering. And we featured recently on air three therapists from AIS. So we, they're our friends. And so he was talking of, so Ed Sheeran's a musician who stutters, and he got into rap music when he was a kid. And here's something he said. So he was into Eminem.
Right.
And he said, quote, "My dad bought me the Marshall Mathers LP when I was 9 years old. I learned every word of it back to front by the age I was 10, or by the age of 10. He raps very fast and very melodically and very percussively. It helped me get rid of the stutter," end quote. And he goes on.
I got heavily into music at a young age and got very, very into rap music. Eminem was the first album that my dad bought me. I remember my Uncle Jim told my dad that Eminem was the next Bob Dylan when I was... say what you want. It's pretty similar. But it's all storytelling. So my dad bought me the Marshall Mathers LP when I was 9 years old, not knowing what was on it, and let me listen to it. And I learned every word of it back to front by the age I was 10, and he raps very fast and very melodically and very percussively, and it helped me get rid of the stutter. And then from there, I just...
I hear that, And then I think of that study that we were just discussing, and the study does not suggest that there's easy fixes for stuttering. I just want to be clear about that. But right. hearing Sheeran talk, and he was likable and charming, but I hear sure. that and I think, oh, didn't that bother you as like, ah, oh, it's not that easy, dude?
You know, I did have mixed feelings seeing that because, you know, he was just speaking from his experience. Like, I'm speaking from mine, you're speaking from yours. And everybody has a different experience as someone who stutters. But his was pretty unusual in that he started stuttering after he had a reaction to having a birthmark removed with laser treatment. And the proper anesthetic wasn't applied, and somehow that affected him on a neurological level, and he's stuttered ever since.
I had a Paul Weinstein birthmark on my face that I got lasered off when I was very young, and one day they forgot to put the anesthetic on, and then ever since then I had a stutter.
So what it sounds to me like is he had 1 year of severe stuttering, and then he took this very atypical route of learning this album backwards and forwards and copying it backwards and forwards, and that helped him gain control. And that's great that that worked for him. But and it's great to have someone who is very famous, you know, sort of come out as someone who stutters. That's very useful for people. But it would be nice to have somebody else who's famous come out and say, yeah, I stuttered then and I have somewhat more control over now, but I still stutter. And it's, you know, and it's affected me in these various ways. Like somebody who stuttered since they learned how to talk, instead of someone who had it kind of thrust upon them at the age of 9. You know, that would be interesting to hear too. And you know, as you said, he was perfectly likable guy, and he was very open about it. And I tip my hat to the guy. Yeah. But in terms of the mass media saying, talking about what he said and saying, here's stuttering and here's how it worked for this person that a lot of your kids idolize. Yeah, maybe that'll work for them too. You know, yeah, it's, well, it probably won't, you know, yeah. Or it might, I don't know. But I'm just kind of hesitant to have someone whose stuttering is very atypical presented as a possible spokesperson for it.
It's very refreshing to hear you talk about these issues because you're right. It's just his experience. Yet, you know, I hear that the concern too. And, you know, I'll just tell you from my perspective, it seems that so many stutterers, so many, always have a traumatic event which happened right around the time of stuttering.
Okay.
And so many parents report the same thing. We went to the barbecue and he had to introduce himself and it was the stress of that. He fell off a bike. You always hear about the falling off the bike, the falling off the bed. And it's so common that when I hear Ed Sheeran say it, it just sounds to me like, yes, we're always looking to try to understand stuttering. Did that traumatic event that he's talking about really cause his stuttering or trigger it? I don't know.
Right.
It's just so common to hear what he's saying. And, you know, I guess I'm always concerned about the message that we might accidentally give to children.
Right.
I know he didn't mean any harm and maybe it's not going to cause any harm, but any chance that somebody could think, because if it should be easy, right? If stuttering should be easy to get over and you can't, then what does that say about you and your abilities?
Exactly. Exactly. And no, absolutely. And I don't know anything about our brains and how they work. I only know enough to know that there's so much that I don't know. And there's so much that is unknown to all of us still. I mean, we still don't know if there is one or two definitive causes of stuttering. Like, my traumatic event was a grand mal seizure. I was 18 months old.
Right, right, yeah.
Which, you know, I was 18 months old. I don't recall any of it. But apparently I was seizing for 45 minutes. And apparently I barely made it out alive. And so maybe that did cross some wires, so to speak, neurologically. But then again, I was only 18 months old, and I was just barely talking at that point anyway. And so many kids stutter when they learn how to talk, but then grow out of it. So who knows if that caused it or if that just exacerbated something that was already there. Like maybe I would have stuttered as I was learning to talk, but then it would have stopped at the age of 6.
Yeah.
Who knows? It's fascinating and frustrating that we don't really know what the cause is.
Yeah. Sai, are you familiar with the musician in the United Kingdom, Scroobius Pip?
I am not familiar with him, no.
Yeah, he was on Stutter Talk a few years ago, and I don't know if he's rap or hip hop, but he's pretty darn cool, and he stutters. And
okay.
So I listened to the Ed Sheeran video clip right after listening to Scroobius Pip's podcast, because he's a musician and now he has a podcast, and you might enjoy it because he just had on Billy Bragg. So he talked to Billy Bragg
for an hour.
It was really cool. And so he talked very openly about his stuttering, and he stutters openly like the whole time. It's so cool. And he talks about how he asked his producers to not cut out his stuttering. And
great.
I think, wow, must be cool to have a podcast and have a producer team. You know, I got to edit this myself, you know? Uh-huh. But he was talking about how he met someone, a fan of his who stutters, and the young man showed him how to tap out syllables on his arm. And Scroobius Pip was like, yeah, it really helps me. He's like, look, I'm going to get stuck on this word. And look, and when I tap it out, I didn't get stuck. And it's like, wow, he's so open about his stuttering. And, you know, he's saying, look, I just do this rhythm trick and I don't stutter. And so he was presenting it as this thing that helps him, which is totally cool.
Right.
But I'm worried like, oh, but gee, you know, if you're teaching someone to tap their arm, what happens when that stops working? Would they stomp their foot too? So now they're doing a dance.
Right.
You know,
right.
So, I mean, I worry about what I say on air all the time. You know, like we just, both of us were just kind of like, I don't want to talk like that. But then people contact Stutter Talk and say, hey, man, that really helped me.
Right. Yeah. And I'm sure that helped a whole lot of people that I was in that clinic with. And a whole lot of them kept at it and applied it, and they were able to incorporate those techniques into their daily speech, and their life is much improved as a result. It's just, you know, one size does not fit all, you know?
Yes, I do. And can I ask you, John Coakley, archivist, drummer, all-around cool dude, photographer, can I ask you just one last question?
Please.
All right. So you are heavily involved in the arts. You've been gigging and drumming for over 2 decades, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And you're a very open guy and you're friendly and social. So when you're I also want to know if you meet other musicians who stutter. You met a few times a former co-host for Stutter Talk, Eric Jackson.
Yeah.
And he stutters and plays guitar, and a current Stutter Talk host, Joel Cordy, he stutters and plays guitar and is in bands. And in fact, he has started a successful pedal effect company.
Nice.
Yeah. So it seems like, I don't know if I just know hip stutterers.
Maybe you do.
Yeah. Because like, I'm sure we could start a couple bands of just stutterers.
Wow.
Or at least one good one.
Well, yeah, probably. Yeah. Probably. Between us.
But, right. But when you're out drumming, do you find, and you drum in a lot of punk, I don't know if I should even say alternative because, you know, that word like, but you know, indie. So you have always drummed in punk indie bands. Do you find that the people you meet are the same toward your stuttering as everyone else, or they're more sensitive or less sensitive? And the reason I bring it up is like, when I moved to New York, I started playing in a softball league with a lot of artsy band guys, punk bands owning clubs. And I was like, wow, a lot of these guys are real jerks.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah. So he's booking Robin Hitchcock to play a gig in Brooklyn, and he's kind of a jerk. And he's not being very cool, and he's interrupting me when I'm stuttering. Do you find that your artsy community is any different with stuttering than anybody else?
Not necessarily. I mean, I have met other musicians who stuttered, but I actually met them at the speech therapy clinics and not in the context of music, you know. But I did meet one or two other people who played drums, who stuttered, and some who played guitar. But you know, and then again, it could be possible that I have met people who stuttered in passing, and whether they're fans or players themselves, and I just didn't know, you know. But generally speaking, people have been pretty cool about it. I do find it is a little more difficult for me to get through stuttering in post-performance situations where the music goes back up and everybody's screaming over the music that's playing over the speakers. And you can't really have a normal conversation. You have to shout. And that's challenging for me. Especially since I will often have a bit of adrenaline pumping through me after playing. So in those situations, I tend to be a little bit more mindful about starting off slowly and working into it. But generally, people are no better or worse than people that I've met through school or work who have no connection to music. So.
Wow. Yeah, and that's so interesting because some people who stutter will say, oh, it's great when there's loud music on because I never stutter then.
Huh.
Yeah, and I'm like you. Like, I can remember distinctly being at a Luna concert and they were covering the Velvet Underground. And I turned to the guy next to me and like, hey, this is a Velvet, and I couldn't get it out, a Velvet Underground cover, you know, uh-huh. Just because the music. And I remember... because I was watching the band Ride just reformed. So I'm watching some of their live stuff. And I think I saw their first American concert and they were so loud. And I remember stuttering while trying to talk to somebody during the show.
Uh-huh.
This is going back to like 91 or something. But anyway, John, is there anything about your stuttering that I haven't asked you or that you'd like a chance to say?
Well, that's a good question. I can't really think of anything. I think we've covered it pretty thoroughly. If anything, I would just want to reiterate, you know, that one size does not fit all, and what might work for me won't work for somebody else, and vice versa. And if there is any common thread through all of it, it's learning to accept yourself for who you are. Which might be a little Pollyanna-ish or what have you, but it's really true. And I think that the more comfortable you can be with your stuttering, the more likely it won't affect you adversely, whether that helps decrease your stuttering or not, you know? Because if you become more comfortable but you're still stuttering, at least you're more comfortable with it.
Yeah.
And being more comfortable with it yourself makes the people you're talking to more comfortable, which is this little feedback loop between the two of you in that moment. So that's a good thing.
It is so great. And I love how you said, you know, learning to accept yourself for who you are. And I thought to myself, that'd be a great title for this episode. And then I thought, but so many of our episodes are accept your stutterings, you know.
Right.
Stuttering. So I need something more juicy. different. But I mean, it's such a powerful message and I love hearing it from you. And I want to thank you, John Coakley, my buddy, archivist, drummer, photographer, and much more for joining us today.
Thank you for having me, Peter. This was great.
Colorado, summer's calling, my restless heart to testify. Shattered hearts.
machete, whiskey, tears, and the sun comes up.